This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sever. So the Inner Health and Living segment today, our psychiatry series, and today we're discussing mind over matter. Well, we're discussing hypnotherapy, actually, in relation to psychology and how that helps with your mental health. In the studio with me, Sharon Koh, a psychologist, and Joyce Hugh, who's a clinical hypnotherapist. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you today?
Very good, Mira. Thank you for having us.
You know, all the definitions I've been reading, or I wouldn't even say definitions, of how people describe hypnotherapy, it almost sounds very manipulative. It says it's the naturally occurring state a person may focus his or her attention with the help of a trained therapist on specific thoughts or tasks. That's number one. Yep. The second one, the person's attention is so focused while in this state that anything going on around the person is temporarily blocked out or even ignored. It's guided relaxation, intense concentration. I mean, all of it is like you're dependent on this one person to send you off into this so-called naturally occurring state. Mm. Is it a naturally occurring state, Joyce?
It is. It's a very natural feeling that all of us go through. It's just that sometimes we're afraid of the term hypnotherapy or hypnosis. But in fact, for example, if you're reading a book and you're absorbed in the book, you imagine everything happening around you. For example, you're actually in Harry Potter world. Mm-hmm. That is already hypnosis.
Okay, so it's got to do, I know, with the conscious and the subconscious mind. Sharon, what's actually happening? What's happening in the conscious? What's happening in the subconscious?
Well, obviously, your conscious and subconscious working together at some point, yeah, at most points of your life. But I think what has been established over lots and lots of research and a lot of people publishing a lot of papers is that they've realized that the conscious mind is a smaller part of what manifests. It's what we are aware of, it's our logic, it's our thinking, ability to think, cognition, etc. Whereas what is actually motivating all that, what brings about certain behaviors, certain emotions, is what lies in the subconscious, which is, to a large extent, the much larger part. So if you just akin the subconscious to a computer storing every memory, every experience, every in a person's life.
Since you were born.
Absolutely. Sounds, sensations, you know, thoughts, experiences, as I said, everything that you go through. The ability to actually get that information, ability to go to that information, retrieve that information, it would give you a resource that is unlimited, isn't
it? So why is it we're not able to pull out most of this information?
I think God helped us that way. God helped us so that it doesn't come normally, naturally, instinctively. It takes a little bit of effort. Can you imagine if every day you remember everything in your life?
You'll be overwhelmed.
We would be.
You can't work and walk.
So how does the conscious mind decide what it wants to take from the subconscious and process?
Joyce, maybe you want to help us work on that?
Okay, so everything is in our subconscious mind, but the way the mind works is that it's actually aware what you need, very analytical, very inspirational. So at times when you are at work, it realizes that you need certain information. It goes straight into the subconscious. So I always say that, take an analogy. What your subconscious is like a filing system. Mm-hmm. There's a file for everything, for work, for relationship, for personal, for studies. So whatever you need, conscious will tell subconscious, I need this file. Go down, take that file, and process it up to your conscious mind. So the two are actually always working together.
Okay, but then the conscious has a limitation, the conscious mind, in how much it's actually taking up from the subconscious?
Because normally our conscious can only hold about 7, plus minus 7 items. Too many, that's when we get overwhelmed and we can't do our daily tasks and all. So the mind sorts itself out in a way that whatever's needed, I will take. Whatever I do need, I push aside.
Okay.
That's why sometimes when we are overwhelmed with an emotional situation, let's say a trauma happens, a breakup, for example, and that's the only thing playing in the mind. So that takes up that seven spaces in your mind. That's why you can't focus on work, you can't focus on anything else. So roughly, that's how our mind works in units.
Okay. So hypnotherapy is this so-called guided relaxation.
Yes.
It's intense concentration. Mm. It's focused attention to achieve a heightened state of awareness. All of that sounds scary. Heightened state of awareness. Mm. I mean, you use this language with meditation,
yeah.
Those sort of language and those sort of exercises.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
in fact, Mira, that's exactly what I was going to say. Why does it sound scary when it comes to hypnotherapy, but not when it comes to meditation or mindfulness?
It scares me.
Oh, does it scare you across the board?
Yes, yes, it does.
Right, okay.
Because I'm like, intense state of awareness. Mm. I mean, what does that really mean? Am I going to experience and have an out-of-body experience, for an example? I mean, and to what extent?
No, you're not going to have an out-of-body experience.
Are you sure?
You're not going to feel yourself rising into the air and looking down at your... I'd love to... What's stopping us from lifting out of the air?
I think physics. Have an out-of-body experience.
People talk about it. But, maybe... Look, it's all semantics, isn't it? It is maybe ultimately feeling like you are leaving behind that weight that has been sitting on your shoulders and giving yourself permission to let it go and go somewhere else, to let that go. And allow your mind to go into something that may be more effective, more productive, more valuable, and then hopefully get some answers to whatever questions you're seeking. Now, this is not, on a stage doing a show. This is someone who has come in seeking some help, some support in a particular issue in their life. So it's a decision as to whether they seek psychiatric help, psychological help, which will include some element of hypnotherapy or any other form of help.
Okay. So what is happening when this guided relaxation exercise takes place?
Okay, back to what you said about the heightened awareness. In fact, there are so many things happening around us, so we need to focus our mind on something. So let's say someone comes in with stress, and that stress affects their immune system. They tend to fall sick easier. So in this case, we focus our attention on the stressor, the stress issue, and we take that away. We slowly desensitize the symptoms, desensitize the feelings, and because your mind can actually heal your body, so that's why we focus your awareness towards your body healing. We focus the awareness towards letting go of all the stresses. So in guided imagery, it's all about me talking, guiding you to visualize things, to imagine that the stress is slowing out, imagine that you are feeling calmer, you are better able to cope with your life, better able to heal yourself in that sense. So once again, perfectly natural.
Okay. And how different is that from mindfulness meditation and all of that that we're talking about today, Sharon? I mean, there's so much about mindfulness now. How different is hypnotherapy from that?
Well, I can't say it's completely different, nor am I going to say that they are one and the same. I think they are different methods to get the same outcome that we want. At the end of the day, we want to be able to help ourselves, whether with a third-party support or not. We want to be able to help ourselves deal with whatever emotional, cognitive issue that is not allowing us to be as functional as we would like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think hypnotherapy was probably earlier than the other sort of
hypnotherapy
ideas.
Has been there for a long time. In fact, I think it was the first to be recognized by APA in 1961, the American Psychological Association.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely there are similarities with hypnotherapy and mindfulness, but sometimes in hypnotherapy, as the word says it, it's therapy done in hypnosis. So we work on specific issues.
That's right.
So say stress, like I was mentioning, we desensitize the stress. We get you to work on specific issues. For example, I deal a lot with trauma cases and how it affects your mind. So using hypnotherapy, I focus on that issue. Help you do a bit of forgiveness, a bit of letting go, a bit of dealing, and more of seeking closure. And then focus your mind on healing, recovering, accepting yourself, feeling calm, being at peace, and then bring you back to where you are right now.
So Sharon, where does hypnotherapy come into your area of work? So when will you decide so-and-so possibly might need hypnotherapy to help them along this journey?
I think we would use it complementary. Yeah, it's not like it's one or the other, or this would give you a better outcome, that would give you a different outcome. I look at it quite complementary. So it kind of doesn't matter at which point it's the entry. It doesn't really matter where they decide to come in. We would work together, or we could work individually and still get the relevant outcome that we want. I find, now this is just purely on a personal level, I find very specific things. For example, smoking or addictive behavior. I find hypnotherapy very effective.
Why is that?
Using hypnotherapy for smoking, for example, we get down to the root cause. We get down to the fact that the subconscious mind only wants pleasure, and it won't do something that you don't want to do. So perhaps they are saying that, oh, smoking relaxes me, but I know it's bad. So consciously they want to, but subconsciously there's something holding them back. Mm-hmm. So in hypnosis, I bring them to this trance level when they're suggest to them that, okay, you're going to give it up, you decided, you want to let go, and then put that into their new belief system. So it's about working with the subconscious, planting in suggestions and encouraging you to make that change, so it makes your willpower stronger.
Okay, but will that not sort of, in a way, reveal more deep-seated problems that require perhaps even longer-term treatment?
So in my case, for example, I might decide that, you know, since I am the therapist there, to get Joyce's assistance on a particular matter, on, let's say, the seizing of that addictive behavior or trait, and then continue. Simply because, only because I feel it might be a little bit unnecessary to double up. So similarly, if Joyce has decided to start on a particular form of treatment and then feel that, okay, maybe one particular issue somebody else can deal with, then we work in tandem. You know, so it's not a question of on this particular issue, this particular method works better. I think at the end of the day, we all will get a positive outcome.
Okay, so my question just now about will that sort of bring about longer-term issues?
That's a very interesting question. So let's say, using this example of the smoker, Sharon sends a smoker to me, and I work based on smoking. But at times, they may feel that maybe it's something else. Maybe it's family pressures that contributes to the smoking issue. That's where we cross river, and Sharon will work on that family issues or whatever underlying issues. So these two techniques, many other techniques, it complements each other.
Okay. Earlier on, you said that hypnotherapy is completely natural. What do you mean by natural, Joyce?
It's a natural phenomenon. So people use it since olden ages to actually help themselves heal, because it's really about how your mind thinks that you can heal yourself. For example, pain management. So pain is often about fear of pain. For example, there's something called hypnobirthing, whereby the mother delivers without any use of anesthesia. So with this technique, we often believe that people are ingrained since young that childbirth equals pain. So they go into the delivery room expecting pain. So using this hypnobirthing, using your natural ability, your mind to control, to think that it's a very natural process, to think that it's just human nature. And when we desensitize the pain, we get you relaxed, we teach you how to relax your muscles, allow more blood flow. So these are the ways that we can actually stimulate our natural healing abilities to help us with our daily lives.
And how successful have you been?
I would say it depends on the clients. So if they want to change, they can change.
Okay, so it's really, if I have no faith in it, it's probably not going to work.
Hypnosis will not make you do something that you don't want to do. Yeah. I will not be able to hypnotize you to go rob a bank or, you know, do something that you don't already want to do. Mm-hmm. So it is something that you yourself voluntarily are looking for some kind of, some answer. And then when that suggestion is made in a positive, encouraging manner, it sort of entrenches itself somewhere. And then it processes itself. It's not like you come out of the of Joyce's room a new person, a changed person. It doesn't, you know, it's not magic. I think sometimes everything has been sensationalized. We understand hypnotherapy from what we see on TV and, you know, what we see on shows, etc., on stage. Yeah, it's not at all.
I think
like
the most important thing to say is hypnotherapy is not about control, it's about cooperation.
Between
the client and the therapist.
Okay, so we'll come back in a while. A lot of other questions to be answered. Sigmund Freud abandoned hypnotism because it made his patients feel dependent. I want to get your thoughts on that coming up. We're discussing hypnotherapy and psychology. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We have Mrs. Lim who has a question already. We'll come back and answer her question. Up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In our Health and Living segment, we have Sharon Kaur, psychologist, and Joyce Hugh, a clinical hypnotherapist. We are discussing psychology and hypnotherapy, where they coincide, how do they work together, what exactly is hypnotherapy? I mean, Joyce has already spoken about how it's a naturally occurring state. You focus on your attention with the help of a trained therapist and, you know, then specific thoughts and tasks are actually addressed through that. Hypnotherapy, if you read, has a lot of success in addiction problems, in pain management, stuff like that. But, you know, there's a whole load of, you know, the debate is still out there as to, you know, how is it? Are you just saying that we can actually control a whole load of things with our minds? Are you saying we can cure cancer by controlling our mind? You know, that kind of thing. So mind over matter really is the topic. So if you have a question, give us a call, 03-77-109-000, tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Mrs. Lim is asking, she has a family of four teenage children, and she says all of them are overweight. She said she's tried implementing healthy eating habits, but it doesn't seem to be working. So should she be seeking the help of a psychologist or a hypnotherapist?
Okay, I'm going on the assumption that when she says she has tried healthy eating, is it? Is that what she said? Tried healthy eating, but it hasn't worked. Now, my first approach would be a little bit of CBT, I think, to look into the behaviors, look into a bit of life coaching. Yeah, so you kind of combine a bit of the nutrition, a bit of the exercise that is required, try to create a routine, etc. So that would be sort of the for immediate, for the here and now. Mm-hmm. And then while one aspect is being looked into, I would also want to look into two other particular areas, explore two other areas. Number one, what is holding them back from continuing what she says healthy eating and hasn't worked? We all know you eat healthy, you have good level of exercise. We know that. It's logical. Again, excluding any medical issues that have arisen or causing this obesity, overweight. So once I would look into what is it that is holding them back? Why are they? What is it that is putting them continuing in this cycle that is actually detrimental? So here she is actually wanting to do something about it, trying to do something about it, and yet seemingly unable to have that sustaining, continuing efforts. Then the third thing I would like to kind of explore is what actually put them there in the first place. We all know overeating is a problem with everyone. We all know that we use it as comfort. We use it to deal with our stress. We use it because we are bored. We use it because we are agitated. We use food to cover up so many other elements. Maybe if we dealt with those other elements, the need to use food might dissipate. Mm-hmm. So these would be kind of the approaches I would use.
Yeah, for hypnotherapy, I guess it's a little bit similar as well, but we'll work more towards the subconscious mind. So, of course, we want to understand. So, let's say there's a lifestyle change. So, apart from telling it consciously in the sense that you must eat this or you must cut down on that, easier said than done. So, I'll use hypnosis to plant it into your subconscious so that you will change your lifestyle. It becomes automatic that you will eat less. It becomes automatic that you just want to exercise. So that is about lifestyle. But another technique, which what Sharon was mentioning about as well, is to look at the underlying factors towards it. Normally, when the client comes in for weight issues, it's not really weight issues. It's more about comfort eating, emotional eating. It's more about eating to feel the need to be loved. It's more about self-esteem because I don't want that attention on me, so I'm going to put on more food. Or it could be that sometimes food equals love, especially in our Asian culture, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
The elders will say, oh, have you had your dinner here? Eat more. And they say, oh, you're so cute when you're a little bit chubbier. So kids, especially young kids, they cannot understand that. They will absorb that information, put it straight into the subconscious, and it becomes their belief system as they're growing up. That being chubby equals being cute. Or that I always need to eat to feel loved. So they grow up with that belief, so they always eat themselves full. And if right now, as an adult, they say that I want to change, but that's a conscious mind speaking. So what hypnotherapy will do is it goes straight down to the subconscious, change that belief system, and bring you back up.
Okay, you make it sound so easy, actually. because, you know, and I can imagine these questions coming in all day. Mrs. Lisa is asking, can you hypnotize my son into studying harder?
Mm.
You know?
There is a technique in hypnosis. In fact, it's just self-hypnosis. All hypnosis is self-hypnosis. All you need to do is learn the technique. And it's all about suggestions, be it suggestions that the therapist gives you or you give yourself. So what you can do, for example, is go into a relaxed state, the theta level where the trance happens. At that level, you tell yourself good positive suggestions. Tell yourself that I'm going to be more focused. I love studying. I'm going to do it better. I'm going to make my mom proud, for example. So these will be the suggestions you give yourself, your own belief systems. And you will start to believe it. The more you say it, the more you believe it.
Okay. You know, is there like concrete scientific evidence to show that, you know, hypnotherapy actually works? Because a lot of the stuff that we've come through is very anecdotal, that kind of thing. I know it goes back in time when it comes to anesthesia. Anesthesia was actually developed from the principles of hypnotherapy. Mm. But in these sort of areas, is the scientific evidence there?
There are actually a lot of scientific evidence. In fact, I think the best one is about pain management as well. So there have been numerous studies about what you just mentioned, hypnosurgery or how we can do procedures just by controlling your mind, for example. Okay. There are also sports management, for example, because we were working together on this paper quite some time ago about how hypnosis is able to increase someone's performance when it comes to sports.
Okay. We have, I was talking to you just now about Sigmund Freud, how he abandoned hypnotism because it made his patient feel very dependent. Mm. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say that because like what I mentioned just now, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. So there's no way you will be dependent on someone. So after a while, you will learn how to do hypnosis by yourself.
Is that necessarily a good thing, Sharon? Self-hypnotizing every now and again you know, when you become very used to doing it. Is there a downside to that?
Actually, Mira, can I just backtrack a little bit on the Freud issue? Mm-hmm. I have my own little small two-cents theory on that. Number one, Freud was very much into the subconscious, conscious mind, etc. That was what his whole ego and id and superego theory was all about. So obviously he did buy into that concept. That is the fundamental elements of his theory. Being not so much a Freudian fan, I would like to think actually he had probably had ulterior motives. He just, because hypnosis was already well established, and he obviously didn't want
to. Well, he's not here to defend himself.
Well, I'd like to.
I let you go on that one,
yes,
Sharon.
Thank you. I always refute any Freudian theories that come up.
I know now.
Yes, you were saying something about it being overly dependent.
Oh, yes. And so, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? That, look, you know, you can every now and again just self-hypnotize and go into this state. Is that necessarily a bad thing?
All support has this element of your client or the other person becoming overly dependent. There are lots of people who feel, oh, I don't want to see my psychologist anymore because I think I'm getting overly dependent. So it can apply to any form. It can apply to your religious support, isn't it? That you do become overly dependent because that's the only form of answer that you're willing to accept and willing to follow. So yes, is it possible that they become overly dependent? In any form of support that is given, people can become overly dependent. Do you self-hypnotize yourself? I think every time we sit back, we take a deep breath, and we kind of tell ourselves, okay, whatever, ... I want to do better, I want to, you know, all the positive self-talks that we give ourselves, isn't that the smallest semblance of self-hypnosis? If you want to look at it very technically, yes, it is.
It's all about giving yourself suggestions.
Again, you make it sound so easy, honestly.
I think the method is not complicated, but you have to be committed. It takes time. It takes a little bit of that effort. It takes repeatedness, and that's where the difficulty lies, I think.
Okay. So if you have a question, do WhatsApp. It's 018-789-8899. I just got a message there. Our phone lines are down, so please WhatsApp. We've got a question here. I used to be addicted to painkillers, and now I have quit, and I feel very good. But my social life is in trouble because I've become so much to myself, meaning I think this person has become very introverted and don't like and cannot talk to my family and my, you know, colleagues and stuff. How can I get in touch and, you know, help to, you know, find that real person in me and really work on it? Because I'm quite worried about how this is actually panning out, you know, and that's coming from Rahim.
Mm. Okay, for this instance, I would probably help him to do a bit of regression, as in bring him back to the past, see himself as how he was in the past, believe that he can do it, because in hypnotherapy, we do a lot of work dealing with the subconscious mind, the part of you that knew everything about you in the past. It's just that along the way, because of things that happened, this dependency that he had, maybe that sidetracked a little. So I might bring him back, get him to reassure himself, tell him that everything's okay right now. I'm going to see myself as a happy-go-lucky person again. So it's about retracing the past, believing in himself again, and then reassuring himself that he can do it. Plan suggestions for himself. How he wants to be, let him visualize it. The more you see it, the better you can achieve it.
Is it a question of whether it works or rather how effective it is?
It depends on him as well. If he believes, then he will be able to do it. Because hypnosis is a lot about visualization as well. It's a lot about that cooperation thing that I said to you. So if if someone believes that it's a miracle cure, it might not be that effective. So it's all about having faith in yourself and in the process that we'll be doing.
Okay, so question from someone here. If I allow myself to be hypnotized, can you actually hypnotize me to do bad things?
I think we answered that earlier, yeah. That no, you will not be able to hypnotize someone to do something that they themselves are not willing to take on.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what if I'm willing to take it on?
Choice. If I want to rob a bank,
okay,
can you make me?
There was actually a study done in the past, and it's actually circulating online as well on YouTube. They did this experiment where they actually hypnotized two group of people. But of course, under watchful eyes. One group was innocent people like you and me. They tried to get us to rob a bank. They hypnotized us to rob a bank, but that
really,
didn't
it was
happen.
Robbing a bank. I was just using that as a...
Really?
I think I watched that YouTube video.
Everyone wanted to know that. So in that sense, no, it can't affect us because we are good people, I hope, and we won't rob a bank because it's against our will. But the other group of people, they were criminals. They had bad intentions, and they believed that I want to earn money fast. So if I hypnotize them to rob a bank, they might do it because that is their intentions.
Okay. Could it go back to the analogy of the subconscious and what's actually recorded in there? Because if you and I haven't robbed a bank, it's not recorded in there. There's nothing really to retrieve. Whereas if you have, then there's something for you to retrieve and work on.
Maybe it's not to say like robbing a bank. Maybe it's about causing harm. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's about earning quick money. About unethical practices.
Okay.
So yes, but that being said, we have a code of ethics that we have to follow. So it's regulated here and everything is under watchful eyes. So that's the difference between the hypnotist and the hypnotherapist.
What is the difference?
Hypnotherapy, we do it for therapy to help you with a clinical setting. But hypnosis, just like the word, is just about planting in images, about giving suggestions. So could be used for entertainment as well.
Okay. The changes from hypnotherapy, how long will it last?
Depends on you. Back to that statement again.
I think in the short term, hypnotherapy is extremely effective.
Mm.
Just like with a lot of other forms of therapy, in a shorter term, the efficacy is very high. The question is now whether it can sustain or not.
Okay.
So let's say with the example of a smoker, if you come in with the intention to quit, I would say that it's permanent, it's full-time, long-term, I mean. But if you come in saying that, oh, my wife asked me to come in to quit, if not, something happens. So in that sense, it won't last that long. So it's all about your intentions to change.
Okay. Mm. Phone lines are back up, so give us a call. The number is 0377109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Question from Ling. She's saying, we just lost our dad to cancer. In the past months, a lot of the dad's life has been revealed. Money issues, marital issues, and the mother is having a hard time letting go. So Leng is asking, do you think hypnotherapy is a good way forward for the mother? So the mother is angry, she's losing sleep because of that,
She's so going through the grieving process.
Yes.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you have all this
additional.
Another thing I would like to know is how long has it been? Because it takes time for a human to process the whole grief, to experience those feelings. So it's okay to actually let them cry a little, feel a bit of emotional pain. But after a while, once it drags on for too long, you can use hypnotherapy to get closure. You can use hypnotherapy to say goodbye, say thank you, make that closure and move on. And then we can work with issues like anger, like that insomnia and things like that. So those are symptoms that comes along with it.
How long do you wait before you actually see?
There's no hard and fast rule on the grieving process. But as Joyce was saying, I think it's really important that a person who needs to grieve has the opportunity to go through that process and the people around them to support.
Okay. We'll be back after a quick market update. We're discussing hypnotherapy and psychology, mind over matter. Give us a call. The number is 03-771-09000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon, and if you have just joined us, welcome. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's our health segment, and in the studio with me, Sharon Kaur, a psychologist, and Joyce Hugh, a clinical hypnotherapist. We are discussing how the both disciplines sort of come together, how, you know, you can actually have options in terms of managing your mental health when it comes to certain problems. So we've gone through quite a lot of questions here, but a question from Yahya Zakaria. He's saying, can one be hypnotized to forget certain memories?
I would say, like what we started, Sharon was mentioning, whatever happened to you, you will remember since day one. So whatever memories will be in your mind. But what we can do is detach the emotion from that memory. So you wouldn't think back, you wouldn't feel that pain anymore. So it's more about, yeah, I remember that happened, but that's the past. I'm moving on, or I'm learning from it and growing from it.
Okay. Question, would the rules require that hypnotherapy sessions be recorded?
The rules?
Yeah. Are there regulations? Okay. I mean, you did say you work in a regulated environment.
Mm-hmm. It's not really written, but there are code of ethics that says that you must actually record down in writing. So we have to have our reports and things like that. So in cases where it's needed by the law, by court, then we can prove it. But if not, there's a strict confidentiality.
Okay. Lee is asking, I was able to quit smoking, but why is it I'm unable to slim down? Is it back to the same willpower?
Sorry, was that quit smoking with hypnosis?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
That's the way our mind works. When you take away something, you have to replace it with something else. Because the act of smoking, right, there's this hand-mouth movement that you're used to, putting the cigarette in your mouth. So once you take that away, there's nothing to do with your hand. So naturally, you might start putting junk in.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah.
So that could be a problem?
Could be.
But what do you suggest Lee does?
Use the same willpower that he had. So tell yourself that if you can quit smoking, you can do it for food as well. It's the same thing. But try to, maybe what Lee could do is to replace it with something healthier instead. So I'm going to start drinking more. I'm going to start eating
drinking
healthier.
Drinking as in drinking water.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that was a
close
certain,
one. Close
certain
one.
Liquids, yes.
Yes.
Not all of them.
Yeah.
Sharon, this is for you. Can hypnotherapy sort of precipitate the onset of personality disorders? You know, psychosis and maybe even certain neurological disorders like epilepsy?
I wouldn't be able to say yes or no. I mean, my immediate answer would be not. It shouldn't. Hypnotherapy should be there for your betterment. Yeah, and any neurological issue is exactly that. It's neurological and needs to be looked at separately.
Okay, and when you talk about hypnotherapy, when people come and see you, Joyce?
Yep.
Are they open to it? What are some of their biggest challenges?
Challenges are in the issues that they present.
And no, challenges in terms of success of being able to adopt hypnotherapy.
Well, I guess by the time you come, the sad thing in Malaysia, a lot of people come to a hypnotherapist as the last resort. So in that sense, but the fact that when you come to my room, my therapy room, you're already willing to make that change. And when you're willing, it's going to be very effective because it's about you cooperating with me and together, I'm going to suggest to you your subconscious mind. So you are the one that's making that change. So the time that you come in, you're already halfway there.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's this argument that if you think you're happy, you really would be, even if you have all the reasons to be sad.
Yeah.
So why isn't it naturally occurring? Why is our default to, you know, focus on the problem, Sharon?
Firstly, I don't think you can fake it till you make it. So it's not like, you know, if you just tell yourself you're going to be happy, you will just automatically wake up one day and magically be happy.
So we cannot think ourselves to happiness?
It's the other way around. I think it is a belief system. It is a belief system. And we know happiness is such a generic term. happiness can entail so many different facets. But yet, what we are looking for is generally a feeling of a good feeling, a feeling of joy, the ability to appreciate things around us. And a lot of that, as we all know, is your attitude, how you take on. We are all going to deal with challenges. How you take on those challenges is important. Understanding how your behavior is related to your subconscious and your conscious is a huge key to being able to understand yourself, understand your own emotions. So if I look at happiness being an emotion where there's lack of sadness, so then if there's no sadness, therefore, by default, you should be happy. Then maybe if you can understand what is it that is triggering those elements that keep you down, that might be a key to help you relieve yourself of those things. So no, it's not that easy to just say, ha, here, 3-1, you are happy, and that's it. No, unfortunately, I really wish, but no, there's no magic wand, just as there are no magic numbers.
Even when you identify the problem, the root cause of the problem, it needs to be worked on.
Absolutely.
It's only the start of a journey towards recovery, isn't it? Joyce, could you teach us how to quickly self-hypnotize? Is that even possible?
I would say that the best time you can do it is right before sleep and right after you wake up. So it's called the hypnagogic and hypnopompic state. Because at that time, you're in the theta level. That's when your conscious shuts down and your subconscious comes up. So what you could do is that every night, lights off, everything done, you're on bed, you're almost going to fall asleep. It's that split moment where you know that, okay, once I turn, I'm going to fall deep asleep. At that time, say a statement. Make sure it's a positive statement. So don't say things like, I won't be lazy, say things that I will be hardworking, because our mind cannot accept negatives. Same thing when you wake up, first thing when your alarm clock rings, you'll still be a little bit drowsy. At that time, say your statement again. This time you can say that I'm going to be full of energy, I'm going to close that deal, I'm going to be successful today. So that sets your mood for the day. We always hear that go to bathroom, when you brush your teeth, smart yourself and say good things, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit too late, because once you walk to a bathroom, you're already in your conscious level. So that's the time your mind will start arguing, no, it's not going to be a good day, my boss is angry with me. So too late. Do it while you're still on bed, you're still drowsy. That's the best time, your theta level.
Would you say that our mind is so powerful, it's even more powerful than certain types of medication, Sharon?
Oh, yes. Our mind is extremely powerful. I think scarily so. Whether it's more powerful than medication, it's hard to say. I suppose medication is very specific.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a headache, you take Panadol, your symptoms are sorted. But the mind is a whole different gamut altogether.
Okay. You have a message for us, Sharon?
I always like to advocate, Don't allow yourself to be stigmatized by anything that is not helping you. If something's not helping you, seek help. Find the support that would work for you and go for it.
I would say to start believing in yourself, believing that your mind can actually do wonders. So it's all about believing that you can do it and you will do it.
Okay, very inspiring. Thank you both very much for joining us today.
Thank you,
Mira.
Sharon Kaur, psychologist, and Joyce Hugh, a clinical hypnotherapist, speaking to us about mind over matter on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Especially when you're using business to do good. Because the Shivas Venture, a global search for social entrepreneurs, is back. They're looking for Malaysia's most promising do-gooder to represent the country to compete for a share of $1 million US in funding. Find out.